Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumour Charity, a cause that means a great deal to me personally. And thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear my story as well as the Williams Formula One team's planning director Richard Jones now, with more to come. Also, if you feel like getting involved further, the Brain Tumour Charity is running the Conquer the Challenge through till May, a virtual fundraiser for those fitness inclined, and there's a leaderboard, so if you're competitive, this is for you. All the details are at braintumourcharity.org. Together, we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. Now, as you know, without you and our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to carry on doing what we do, which is bring you the biggest names in motorsport and delving into their lives and opinions. This season, we couldn't be happier to be teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. With F1 Experiences, official ticket packages coming direct from Formula One, you can get unique access that simply isn't available anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. Good things come to those who listen to the Motormouth podcast. Don't say we don't treat you well. So what are you waiting for? The 2021 F1 season is set to be one of the closest in years, so get booking your F1 experience today with F1experiences.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today is another ridiculous day here at Motormouth HQ. Over the last few weeks, we've had former Formula One and IndyCar champions, we've had team bosses, pundits, and motorsport thought leaders. And with each passing show, it feels like we're announcing our biggest guest to date. But today feels like we might just have trumped it again. However, before we get onto that, I have to head, as always, over to Wessex to introduce my co-host. But first, did you know that the town of Walden in Essex was the UK's HQ for the production of Saffron Spice, which is pound for pound the most expensive spice on the planet? From the 16th century, Walden's favourable soil and climate made it the perfect breeding ground for the tiny crimson threads that were sold and exported across the world. So synonymous was the town with the spice that it became, Saffron Walden, which it remains to this very day. Harry Benjamin, what do you make of that?
I don't think you're going to get any of those kind of facts on any other motorsport podcast. So we've got the monopoly on that at least. So that's good. It's always good to learn new facts about Essex. It's excellent. I'm very well though in the meantime. Tim, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. I know we're tight on time because we have a very busy guest today. So shall I crack on and introduce the man?
Yes, Stu, very important guest. I even put on a shirt for today, yeah, so I know it's important.
I went T-shirt. Poor effort.
Poor show. Come on,
right. Nico Rosberg was a six-year-old boy when he decided he was going to follow in his father's footsteps and make it to become a Formula One world champion. 25 years later, he did it, and he did it in style with the best mic drop the F1 fraternity has ever seen, with an almost instant retirement after a mere 5 days, securing the most sought-after title in global motorsport. We're here to learn more about the man, the driver, the businessman, and the entrepreneur, Nico Rosberg. A huge welcome to the Motormouth.
Great to be here, and hello to all of you Motormouth fans.
Thank you so much for joining us, Nico, and taking time out. We'll dive straight in, because what we like to do at the start of every single podcast is just take it back to the very beginning just briefly. And our listeners would love to sort of hear about what it was like just for you starting out in your early life and obviously growing up in a motorsport family. Was there any other option aside from motorsport?
Well, I was obviously very fortunate to grow up watching my father race, you know, and it was so inspiring, so powerful. He was racing in DTM at the time, which was the world's leading touring car championship. And of course there with, the, I mean, there was 80,000 fans. It was crazy. The technology, the battles, I absolutely loved it. And that's where my dream started as well.
And at that point, you're growing up, you're racing. When you move into racing, you're very close to your father when you do it. He becomes your manager and helps guide you through karts and so on. That must have been a very special time for you and a nice period to share a passion with your father all those years ago.
Yeah, of course. It was such a great father-son activity and of course also a huge help that he had all that knowledge and experience, and because he'd done it before with Mika Häkkinen. He'd taken Mika Häkkinen as a manager from go-karting all the way to the Formula One World Championship. So he had done that whole path with a driver already. So he could just kind of replicate it with me. And he was very, very supportive. So that was great. Nevertheless, also, it's never easy, you know, father, son. And definitely he was also expecting me to perform in life, not just in racing, but in life to push and to achieve something. So there was also some expectation.
How did you manage that pressure? Because obviously it's a bit of a double-edged sword, as you just said.
The pressure didn't come from my dad. It was mainly, I just put the pressure on myself because I want to impress and I want my parents to be proud of me. And so I put the pressure on myself to do well. And not only my parents, I want also friends, family, and even beyond that, the public to have respect for me and for what I achieve.
Do you ever give your dad a hard time because you've started more races than him in F1, but you have considerably more wins? Is there ever a little poke in the ribs and like, you know, Dad, come on, I've done a bit better than you here in the end?
Actually, no. I mean, you say that I could do it sometimes, yes, but I've never thought of it that way, and I never actually use that as poking at all, because what my dad achieved was also amazing, and yeah. And you can't really compare the episodes or the times, and it's so different. Yeah. But I do remember that my dad was my mechanic once in the very beginning of go-karting, and I went out and I lost a tire in the middle of a corner. Like, it's never happened. That doesn't happen usually. So he forgot to tighten the bolt, and so we had a bit of a discussion, and we agreed that he shouldn't be my mechanic anymore from then on.
That was not one of his strengths.
Definitely not. No, mechanicing was not the strength.
But still, what an amazing experience to have, of course, with your dad being there right from the beginning. Was there a moment where you thought, when Formula One was becoming a reality and you were joining the fraternity, did you think from the start, I can be a world champion?
No, never. That's... I don't know if it's a weakness or strength, but I never had such a high self-belief about myself. That was the dream, of course, to become world champion, but totally impossible to reach. Even F1 was impossible to reach, and I never even believed that I could get to F1. And I don't know. I mean, at least I can maybe give a little bit of hope to everybody who's listening who also doesn't have so much self-confidence, self-belief, that it's not a problem. You can achieve great things even if you don't believe it. As long as you hustle, you're committed, and you're absolutely flat out giving it everything you can achieve massive things. Because people, you often hear, hey, just believe in yourself. You got to believe in yourself. I've tried to work on that with a mental coach for like 10 years to try and increase my belief in myself, and didn't really manage to improve it. So you can't just hit a switch and suddenly believe in yourself. It doesn't work like that. So it comes down to preparation and just fighting like mad and being dedicated.
I think that'll be a really nice thing for our listeners to hear, because, you know, watching you race in Formula One all those years and watching you through your career, I don't think all that many people are probably aware that you had any self-belief issues. You know, it felt like from the outside looking in that, you know, you were very confident and self-assured. It was that a misconception, do you think? Do you think you hid that part of you from the public when you were racing?
Of course, there's so much Hollywood going on. I mean, we look like these gladiators in our armor. We look like we're superhuman in that race car. But we have the same issues and worries and fears as everybody else. Of course, some more, some less. But we all have those struggles. And in fact, you often say that the only real opponent in racing is yourself. and it's really getting the best out of yourself and dealing with all these worries and fears and things like that.
I think, as Tim said, a lot of people take so much comfort in that. It's brilliant that you're so open and honest about it. I think it's really refreshing as well for you know, athletes to talk about that, this kind of thing too. Now, your career is obviously incredibly well documented. So we are just touching on a few key things before we get to your latest ventures. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was China. Now, in Formula One, you've always had a bit of a love of China around that track. You've always done quite well there. You got your first pole position there in 2012, going on to win. You must have some really fond memories of China. Anything particular about the track?
Do you have a lot of Chinese listeners then, or why are we touching on China?
Oh, loads.
I just thought it was quite a nice start for you.
Well, China, yes, China is a special place for me, because also there it took me 111 races. To win a first race. And of course, after about 90 or 100 races, you think, okay, maybe it's just not meant to be and I'm never going to win a Formula One race. And so all the self-doubt creeps in massively. And then to finally get it, though, was such a, I mean, such a special moment. It's such a breakthrough. It's so powerful. Forever, you're going to be a Formula One race winner. That's so big.
When you were at Mercedes during those years, did you see what was coming, or were you taken by surprise, or was the hard work that was there from the very moment you joined Mercedes?
Yeah, I saw what was coming. This was never going to work out. Like we were going backwards. Like this was it was a real disaster. I definitely saw what was coming. It was going backwards. But it was just, I mean, there it's testament to Ross Brawn. Ross Brawn, who is absolutely now the managing director for sporting activities in Formula One. And he initiated this transition from Mercedes to get back to being the best and now the best of all time, because he made some very smart personnel decisions. And people don't really know that, but like if you take, so for example, the chief constructor he took, which was an old friend of his from Ferrari days, it was Aldo Costa, the aerodynamicist he took, those kind of people were so key in turning this thing around. And so definitely Ross had a big part in this as well.
Now, let's talk teammates and Lewis. So you and Lewis had a long history before you faced off in Formula One. When did you first come across him in a competitive environment? And I think a lot of people probably think you guys didn't necessarily get on, but that wasn't the case.
We were best friends. We were best friends. We went on holiday together. We shared a hotel room all year because it was just the two of us in the karting team at the time. And it was all paid by McLaren and Mercedes. So they were paying for our racing. So it was a great time. And now I understand why it was quite difficult to beat him in go-karts. Now I definitely do understand. Because I was kind of like, before he arrived, I was always getting the pole positions and winning. And then suddenly he arrived and he was a real threat, together with Kubica, really. And then he won the big championship even when we were racing together there, and I finished second. So that was a tough one to digest. But at the time, it's just so much easier. You can, even if he wins and I'm second, we can easily still be best friends off track, because it's just, there's so much less going on, so much less interest, so much less importance. So it just makes it all a lot easier.
When the Mercedes car started to become the dominant team in Formula One, 2014, you've already been teammates for a year. When was the moment where, you know, the relationship started to change a bit? Was it straight off the bat when you both knew you had a car that could fight for the championship, or did it take a bit of time?
No, it took a bit of time. It was primarily then when we're really like fighting for the race wins and championships, that's when it just becomes so incredibly intense. And especially when it's just the two of us. I mean, it's us two against each other and that's it. So that's when it, when it kind of spiraled a bit downwards. But the respect, nevertheless, has always stayed, and I also have huge respect for what he's achieved, and I find it so fantastic, which is a move to the next point now, that we're meeting again now. Yeah. It's like Nico versus Lewis 2.0.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This time as team owners in this new championship that we're going to touch on.
It's so funny that you've now come full circle and you're going to be doing it again as team owners, and we're going to come on to that shortly. I want to fast forward slightly to 2016. You won the World Championship, an astonishing year to be a Formula One fan. The dramas that unfolded that year, the dramas in Spain between you and Lewis, then going on to share victories on your way to clinching the title in Abu Dhabi. After all those years of hard work, working with your father, coming up through the sport, take us back to that day, crossing the line. How did it feel?
Well, it was 20 years in the making for me. So imagine you're working for something for 20 years, dedicating your life to that. And then it was just incredibly intense, because throughout that one race, which was the deciding race and end of the year, in my mind, I lost the championship twice. There was two phases in the race where I was convinced, okay, I've lost this. And that was so tough to manage mentally then in those situations, because I had to stay focused. And I was fighting one of the most risky drivers out there in Max Verstappen. But that's really where all my preparation came in handy. And that made the difference. I've been working with a mental trainer and a psychologist since 10 years to prepare for such moments. I put so much effort into the mental preparation with meditation and the visualization and everything that goes into it. And then that helps to just not make that mistake when the pressure is at its absolute peak. So then crossed the line, became world champion, and fulfilled my dream, really. So it's emotionally so powerful, lucky to experience that. And that's one of the things that I will forever miss, that I will not be able to experience such an emotionally powerful explosion again in life.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including driver appearances, private pit lane walks, behind the scenes tours of the illustrious F1 paddock, team garages, the famous podium, and loads more. It's the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when booking online at f1experiences.com.
And then the mic drop moment and retirement. When did that first cross your mind?
The thought was a couple of months already before the end there, as I was taking the big championship lead. I thought, okay, if I bring this home now, I think it could be a good moment to move on in life. But I never really believed that I could do it. And then when I crossed the line, though, and that pressure released, I felt like, okay, this really feels like a good moment to maybe pull it through. But still, it still took a lot of courage, because it was a jump into complete unknown. Like, I hadn't planned anything for the post-career. So it took a lot of courage from my side, but then I committed. It just felt right. I committed, and the exit was it's an important thing for me to exit on a high. And this exit was, like, I mean, for me, the most beautiful. So of course I'm sorry for the fans that were following me, but still thankful for all those years, and I'm hoping that everybody understands that for me it was the best to move on in exactly that moment when I fulfilled everything I dreamed of.
Yeah, and timing-wise, it's all worked out very nicely for you. We're going to come on to what you're doing now, and obviously Extreme E and sustainability and your Green Tech Festival. Before we do, we have something very important, which puts your Formula One Championship completely in the shade. This is the Motormouth Quiz. I will hand over to my illustrious colleague to introduce it.
Yes, Nico Rosberg, welcome to Motormouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport. We have four clips to play you, and you're going to hear them, and then we just want you to provide a little bit of context for them, and then you get points, basically.
Do you
have to
provide context after the clip, or do you?
Yes.
After the clip.
Okay.
So there are 14 points up for grabs. Now, at the moment, if we're looking at the top tier of the table, Mark Webber's up there with 12, Brendan Hartley on 12.5, Alexander Sims and Dilbagh Gill currently top it with 14, And then, unfortunately, people like Mario Andretti, Johnny Herbert are all the way down at about 30th position. They did not do very well. And last is Karun Chandhok with 3.5 points. So that's the one to beat. Are you ready for your first clip?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Tim, play clip number one.
Here it comes.
I have all the testing all day long, so there's a lot of preparing technically for the weekend, for Saturday, Sunday. That's the most important period of the weekend. And
I know this.
Yeah, go on then.
Michael and Sebastian, it was Michael telling Sebastian to put the mic closer to my mouth, and Sebastian did that then.
That was brilliant. Do you remember what year it was?
Ooh, that's a toughie.
So Michael was obviously my teammate. So let's go for, it's 10, 11, 12. Let's take a guess. Sebastian was sitting there, obviously in a Red Bull shirt. So let's go for 2011.
Oh, it was 2012.
So close.
That's not fair.
You still get 2 points for that. 2 out of 3. It's a very good start. Let's move on to clip number two. Have a listen to this.
Here we go.
Guys, brilliant stuff. Brilliant. What a car you've given me. What a car. Unbelievable.
Probably quite a hard one. I'm looking for a race and a year.
Let's go for China 2012.
Oh, it's worth a guess. It was actually, I'm going to give you a point because you've obviously won a race. I'm assuming you know that because I'm being very generous. It was actually Australia 2014. So I'm the first time you crossed the line winning in that Mercedes dominant car.
Okay.
How
on earth should I, come on.
It's the hardest quiz in motorsport.
It's the hardest quiz in motorsport, Nico. That's what we're here for. Okay, clip number three. Have a listen. Right.
Abu Dhabi. Abu Dhabi 2016, 23 seconds after crossing the finish line.
Got it in one. Don't need to say any more on that. What a moment for you. Okay. One more clip for you. Here we go.
This one makes me chuckle.
Quite another question. Gentlemen, a short view back to the past. 30 years ago, Niki Lauda told us, take a trach, a monkey, place him into the cockpit, and he is able to drive the car.
Oh, dear. We're not going to play the whole thing.
Not playing the whole thing because it goes on for about 3 minutes. But what's happening there?
I mean, Lewis is sitting there as well, I think. Yeah. And Lewis cracks up massively because I think the question... does the question not go to Lewis, I think? And so let's... how the hell would one... I mean, okay, he's a German guy, so let's take a German race. I'll go for Hockenheim 2014.
I'm going to give you the point for 2014, but it was actually in Abu Dhabi. And you get the point for the journalist, but it was actually directed at you and Sebastian, that question. So out of all that, I'm going to give you 1.5 points on that one.
The most ridiculous question ever asked in a press conference.
It's iconic, really. Okay, your final bonus question is, how many points did you score in the 2016 F1 season? And if you get within 10, you get the point either side.
Oh, man. 381.
Oh!
Oh! Yep. 385. You get the full point. Well done.
Nailed it.
Right. Let me do some quick maths. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7.
Solid
okay,
mid-table.
Okay, Nico Rosberg. We're looking at mid-table, I'm afraid. I'm going to be upfront and honest about that. We're at 8.5 points, which puts you right with... just above Johnny Herbert and just below Thierry Neuville. So it's good company, but unfortunately not quite at the top. We'll stick to talk about the F1 World Championship, shall we?
Okay, that was hard.
The hardest quiz in motorsport, but well done. You completed it.
It was a solid effort. Now, let's turn our attention to more modern days. So leaving Formula One, it gives you instant control over your time and your future after all those years of control. You found your niche now in sustainability and green technology as an entrepreneur and investor. Where does that climate change and sustainability purpose and passion come from?
I made a promise to myself, really, after stopping my career, that as an entrepreneur, I want to be of service to mankind, for the greater good, and really dedicate all my projects and focus on that. And then sustainability, primarily coming out of mobility, which is going electric, because the mobility industry is one of the top three emitting sectors, you know. So It's causing a lot of damage longer term, and there's a huge opportunity there in mobility to make a difference. So that's really how I started my path as an investor, investing into multiple startups, and that's how everything started.
And your Green Tech Festival that you're heavily involved with, naturally, you've started. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I'm also a founder now for two companies, and I'm very proud of that. So there's, first of all, the Green Tech Festival in Berlin, it's a global platform. And we hope to empower change makers and also like all the innovative green technologies, bring everything together really for our sustainability. So that's what the platform is about. And it's gone from success to success. I mean, we even had Sundar Pichai there last year, who's a Google CEO, joining virtually. So I'm very proud of that. And the second one, which we're going to be talking about later, is Rosberg Extreme Racing, fully electric in the Extreme E Championship.
Well, that's an excellent segue. But how did Extreme E come about for you? Because obviously you're an investor in Formula E as well. So was Formula E, was that a jumping point? Or so, you know, when you became involved with Formula E, was there talk of Extreme E already, or did that sort of come out of the blue?
No, Formula E I looked at right after F1. And I was so convinced that this e-mobility would take off. And so there was an opportunity there to invest into Formula E and become a part and support them in different ways. So I took the chance, and it's gone great. I mean, it's almost a unicorn now, and they've done a fantastic job, and also brought in all these different manufacturers. It's the way they've positioned the championship, that the races go to the fans, into the city centers. They really showcase electric mobility, make electric mobility cool. It has a great purpose.
Yeah, and of course, out of Formula E, from the amazing mind that is Alejandro Agag, comes Extreme E, of which you are, of course, entering a team. So tell us about your Extreme E entry. For those who might not be familiar with the championship yet, tell us a bit about how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So Extreme E, it's also a global championship. And here we've got one make fully electric SUVs, off-road SUVs, and we're racing in the most extreme locations around the world. There's five races, and each location is severely under threat from climate change and has already been quite damaged from climate change. And so we're racing there to raise awareness for the threat that it's already causing in our planet. But not only that, we're also going to go there to support the local projects and really create a lasting positive change in those local areas.
And something that's very cool about this championship, which some people might not know about, is the paddock and how that gets around. Tell us a little bit about the arrangement with the boat.
Yeah, of course. I mean, logistics is something which is difficult to make it climate neutral. And therefore, Alejandro thought that the best would be to buy one of the most sustainable big ships there is out there. Which is the same boat as Greenpeace use, actually. And so the whole paddock is on there and traveling on there from race to race around the world. And that reduces global emissions from the logistics by 2/3. So it's a big, big step in the right direction. Of course, it's not zero, but on the grand scheme of things, we will certainly be climate positive with all the impact that we're going to be generating. And another interesting aspect is we're also locally at the races, all the energy is going to be powered by hydrogen generators. Just using water and solar. So that's also huge. And we're not going to be causing any local emissions there.
Yeah, that's great. I think hydrogen is certainly one of those to look out for. Seems to be the future for sure. Is it too early yet to have any expectations for Extreme E? Can you start to work out already who the stronger teams are going to be?
Yeah, we've worked that out. I mean, we are definitely going to be fighting at the front. And our ambition is to fight for the championship, certainly. Don't really want to name the other teams, but it's going to be very competitive, and that's the beauty of this. So I was mentioning before Lewis against me 2.0, now as team owners. This time, though, the competition is going to be just as fierce. And as you know, it's going to be a lot of wheel-to-wheel racing because we're starting four cars alongside each other for each of the races during a weekend. And now to leverage and to see this battle that Lewis and I, in this case, for example, will have as a vehicle to raise more awareness for some of the threats we're facing as a society. So really to support the greater good, that's the beauty of this.
Another brilliant thing about Extreme E as well, obviously it has this huge climate angle, but it's also great for diversity and equality because every team has to have a male and a female driver. Now, what are your thoughts on that? And tell us a bit about, you know, your driver lineup and how you chose them.
Yeah, that's so smart. I mean, equality is part of sustainability and a big factor, as we know. Primarily, with the necessity to further empower women around the world, and that's also we want to be a role model for that. So each team has a male and a female driver who share the driving duties, and that's fantastic. You know, switching drivers in the middle of the races, and the way they work together as well has been really nice to see within the team. So hopefully we can really inspire with that as well.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I mean, my team as well, we have a huge Driven by Purpose campaign, which we're launching, where in each location, we're going to leave the location in a better state than when we arrived. So already in our first test in Spain, we engaged in a huge tree reforestation campaign, and we're really taking that very, very seriously. And it's just as important to us as winning.
Have you and Lewis spoken about the championship and facing off against each other?
Not yet, actually, but I'm sure we'll have the opportunity at some point. But he'll be quite busy again this year. So
yes.
I imagine. Yeah.
I mean, how many races is there this year in FM? Like 23?
23 races, yeah. It's,
wow.
It's crazy.
How do you feel about that? 23, is it too many?
If I was a driver, I would be saying it's really pushing the boundaries. But now as a spectator watching, I would love to see 35 races.
Yeah. We were always saying the same. We're like, come on, what are they moaning about, these F1 drivers? God, what's your take on current Formula One, and how excited, and do you think these changes that are hopefully going to come in 2022 are going to make a big difference to the sport?
Yeah, so I just saw a post yesterday on Instagram, I think, from Formula One, and it's so cool how they are as well now becoming more and more purposeful in what they're doing. Of course, there's the racism topic, which is very important, which Formula One has been using as its platform to support. Then climate change, of course, and also equality, and that they're really now ramping up all their projects, and it's fantastic to see. But beyond that, which is a lot about raising awareness, I also really want to see even more being done, that the technology that they still are continuing to be technological innovators, where we all benefit from eventually. So the race to road transfer of technology. And there, I think that the huge opportunity is with synthetic fuels.
Yeah.
Because it will take years for electric mobility to penetrate globally. And then also, electric mobility alone is not enough. You need to have renewable energies powering those electric cars. And until that happens, in emerging markets, it's going to take years.
Yeah.
So there might be a fast-tracking way by using synthetic fuels. The problem is synthetic fuels are very expensive to produce. The logistics are also still very polluting. So there's still some challenges. But if F1 could play a key role there, that would be beautiful.
That's a really interesting topic, because we've often asked guests, you know, what is the future for Formula One? Is it going to become obsolete? Formula E has this, you know, single-seater electric contract sewn up, so they can't go fully electric and probably wouldn't want to go fully electric. Do you think, on the basis to your point about synthetics and so on, that Formula One still has a future, you know, 20, 25 years from now?
Oh, absolutely. Formula One will always remain the pinnacle of motorsport. It's what we love most, seeing those gladiators out there fighting. So certainly will remain, but they need to do their homework, and they need to stay relevant also technically. And it's just not easy to, because the decisions they need to make like 5-6 years in advance, and it's so difficult. Because another one would be fully electric is not an option, because the battery density is not high enough yet. So you're going to be going too slowly if you go electric. Unless you do swappable batteries, that would be an option to keep the performance up. And if not, you have hydrogen, which would be fantastic, really, as a solution. But it's maybe too early, because it's just not relevant yet for the mobility world. So it's a very difficult one.
Yeah. It'll be fascinating to see how it all unfolds in the coming years. And speaking of the future, we've seen, obviously, in the news last week, Lewis Hamilton's just signed for another one-year deal with Mercedes. What do you think about that? Do you think he's done after this year?
No, I don't know. I can't put myself in his head, but I think it was great news, because of course we all love watching him fight out there and battle the Max Verstappens of this world. And And it would be incredible to watch him on his way to trying to get that eighth title. Is going to be pretty insane.
And what do you think Valtteri needs to do to do what you did and beat him?
Valtteri needs to become more consistent, I think. And also, he needs to use Lewis's weaknesses a little bit more. Lewis has the tendency sometimes to lose a little bit of focus and then drop the ball a little bit. And if you pounce big time onto that, you can extend that period for a couple of races. So he really drops the ball for a couple of races then. Mm. But if you don't pounce on it, he'll be back straight away. And there's the only opportunities you have to make inroads into his points. Because when Lewis is at his best, it's so difficult to beat him. And that's what Valtteri just needs to try and do better. And he needs to be more consistent as well to use those periods more often.
Do you think his seat is seriously under threat from George Russell after, you know, that brilliant display in Bahrain?
I don't know if that seat necessarily is under threat. I mean, Valtteri is doing a very, very good job in that position. He still finished second in the championship last year. He wins races, gets pole positions. So you can't say he's doing a bad job. But of course, George Russell is a fan favorite in a big way. We'd all love to see him in a Mercedes. So he'll definitely have a chance at some point in the future.
Now, Nico, we have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, and they throw up various different answers. I'm actually going to, on this occasion, make it four. They're relatively quick fire. The first one, I want to know, you've had a glittering career. You've done everything you set out to do. You're a Formula One world champion, and you're now in business. If you could, would you have done anything differently? Is there anything you would have changed in your path to the present day?
Absolutely. There's quite a few things I would change. But I don't really feel the urge necessarily. Like, it doesn't come to me every day, oh, I wish I could have changed it in the past, because I'm so lucky that I managed to fulfill my dream in such a way in the end. If I wouldn't have managed to do that, certainly it would be more difficult to live with the mistakes that I did along the way.
Yeah, and I suppose mistakes, you know, they're not a bad thing, are they? You know, you learn from mistakes. It gives you that extra knowledge.
Yes, of course. So if I can add to that, so since I spent so much time with a psychologist, that was one of the key things that I worked on. It's to learn to not only hate failure, but to also accept failure and even sometimes appreciate failure. Very difficult, but to be aware of that, try and appreciate failure. Of course, it's not every failure. Some failure is really horrible, but if it's not too bad, then really appreciate the failure, because it's an opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to become better. Yeah. And it's only thanks to failure that I became world champion.
Yeah, I very wise words and completely agree with that sentiment.
And that actually brings us nicely onto our second question. How much of your success is down to, you know, luck and right place, right time, and how much is down to sheer hard work?
Luck always plays a role. If I think back in my career, there was always luck in so many steps of the way. But the big point is, most of the time, you create your own luck by hustling, by being tenacious, by practicing the hell out of it. You can create your own luck and then grab hold of it, you know, with two hands, and don't just let it pass by. Yeah. And be courageous also into discomfort, because it's in discomfort where you grow most.
Yeah.
So that's why luck, yes, but it's not the big thing.
Second to last question. I'm going to mess up the order, Harry. Sorry, but I'm keen to ask this one. What are you scared of?
Scared of losing. Even after all that mental training, still scared of losing. Scared of failing. For example, there we go. Yeah. I'm scared of hurting myself.
Physically hurting yourself.
I'm not the adrenaline junkie. Like, you wouldn't see me going high speed in something crazy.
Yeah, fair dues.
Well, Tim's gone off script now, so I'm going to improvise for what the last question is. I'm assuming it's, what does the future hold? Am I right that?
No, I was going to go, what's got you excited?
We've done that one.
No, we haven't done it.
It's all fallen apart at the very end. Right, we'll edit that bit out.
No, what's got me excited is that I'm continuing my legacy now for my second part in life, and I want to have massive impact as a businessman.
Yeah, no, it's
well said.
And you're clearly doing that. It's amazing what you're doing with your festival, your entrepreneurial exploits, obviously Extreme E, your sustainability goals. I think it's all fantastic. It's really inspiring for us to hear, our listeners, and obviously the next generation, which is coming through, which is obviously very important to you.
By the way, my festival is 16 to 18 of June this year in Berlin, and you can follow virtually as well.
Are you hoping to have people there live?
Yeah. So we have this. We've invested a lot and a lot of time into creating this Corona concept. Where last year we had 3,000 people on site in the middle of Corona.
Wow.
Being super careful, huh? And it's, I mean, super robust. Like, yeah, there's no risk in there. So we're going to be able to do the event in person as well this year. So it's hybrid.
And how does someone get, I mean, do you register, or is it an invite only? Do you have to be in a certain field, or could you just buy a ticket and go?
No, anybody can register. Anybody can register online for the virtual part. And if not, you can also buy a ticket, of course, and join us in person.
I feel a trip to Berlin coming in June, Harry.
Anything that gets me out of the house, I'm there.
Yeah. Nico Rosberg, Formula One world champion, all-round good guy, sustainability entrepreneur and businessman. Thank you so much for giving up your morning and joining us on the show. That's been the Motormouth podcast. Nico Rosberg, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Hold up, don't go anywhere. Before we wrap up today's show, we wanted to introduce you to Keith Bruce, the president of F1 Experiences, our latest podcast partners. Keith and his team offer incredible trackside experiences and VIP hospitality at every F1 race on the calendar.
That is correct. And Keith, first, thanks so much for partnering with us for the podcast. Having experienced your Champions Club suite in Japan myself, I can vouch firsthand for how good your product is. It's a pleasure to have you and the team associated with our show, and we wanted to highlight our appreciation by spending a few minutes learning a little more and letting our listeners hear it from the horse's mouth.
Absolutely. Now, Keith, your business is built obviously around hospitality. How on earth have you adapted to the situation we've all found ourselves in over the last year?
Yeah, it has been, needless to say, a crazy 12 months. And so, like many of us in the industry, we've had to sit back and really take a look at how we could reinvent our business. The pandemic created a kind of, at first we were in that wait and see mode. How long is this going to take? And Formula One then starts up again in Austria as one of the leading global sports to go back to live events, obviously without fans. So then it became, when can we bring fans back? And we had our one and only race in Portugal last year, where Kate Bevan and her team produced a phenomenal paddock club. We produced the Champions Club that Tim referenced earlier that he was a part of in Japan in 2019. And we were able to create fan experiences. So it was fun to get back in the saddle and do what we do well, even if it was just for one race. But what it did is it motivated our team to really take a step back and say, okay, 2021 will still be a bit abnormal. So how do we look at things like the virtual paddock club that Formula One has created in partnership with Zoom? How do we create new updated experiences? How do we modify our hospitality to be, you know, COVID safe in these environments? We watched the hospitality industry and the trends we were seeing with airlines and hotels for cleanliness and sanitary environments and things of that nature. So we just had to step back and completely take a new look at things. And now we're getting ready to roll out this year, as soon as events allow fans to come to Formula One. And we're hoping Monaco is looking most likely to be that first race of the year. So it has been a learning experience for sure.
Monaco, not a bad place to kickstart your real world hospitality. So for people who don't
That's
know,
right.
who may not have heard of F1 Experiences before, what are some of the sort of standout features of your hospitality programs, and what makes it different from other forms of hospitality?
Yeah, it's a great question, Tim. I mean, for us, F1 Experiences, we are the official experience, hospitality, and travel program of Formula One. So if you really think about it, our job is to motivate fans, both new fans and existing fans, to want to go to an F1 race. And we do that by providing what we call an ultimate experience, to be able to go to a Formula One race with obviously a ticket in hand, but then to experience some of the things that make a Formula One journey so special, have inside access, great views, access to hospitality. That's essentially what we create. So we create custom packages that allow fans of all levels to come to a Formula One race and appreciate the sport. It's important to note, too, that while we create these experiences, you don't have to be a multimillionaire to enjoy Formula One and through F1 experiences. We offer a variety of different packages at different price points. Our starter package starts at around $700 US, going all the way up to, you know, the ultimate paddock club experiences and beyond. So we've worked hard to tailor our experiences to the different types of fans who. Some might want hospitality, some might want great views, some just want to be able to roam the paddock and be able to see what's going on. And that's our job, is to open up the sport, make it more accessible, make it more enjoyable, particularly for new fans. The Drive to Survive series has introduced Formula One to a whole new world of fans. And so the millennials are a huge focus for us. And a lot of our fans in 2019 were relatively new to the sport. And obviously, we had to take a pause in 2020, except for the one race I mentioned in Portugal. And now we want to refocus on bringing those fans back, but also doing things that keep the core fans coming and wanting more.
It's a brilliant way, to allow not just access in general to Formula One, but as you say, for those new fans, of which there are, you know, tons of new ones, as you say, thanks to Drive to Survive. So that sounds amazing. Now, you've put some air miles in around the F1 calendar in the last few years. What is your favorite place to visit and, you know, enjoy some trackside hospitality? It must be tough to pinpoint one.
Oh, yeah, Harry, that's a tough question. I mean, the beauty of Formula One is it travels to, you know, 21, 22 of the most beautiful markets in the world, right? So they're each in their own a fantastic destination. Personally, Melbourne's one of my favorite. I love Melbourne. I love the Victorian hospitality, and it's such a sporting culture. But it's such an enjoyable place to kick off the season. Looking forward to going back there in November this year with the change up in the calendar. We mentioned it earlier, Monaco. I mean, it's the ultimate Super Bowl, if you will, of Formula One. Just the sights, the sounds, the energy. And if we do, in fact, open up that being the first race of the year with hospitality and fans and experiences, which it's looking like that's going to be the case. What a fantastic way to open up the season to fans, you know, globally, who'll be watching it all around the world, but then on site there. And we have a special relationship with the ACM, the Automobile Club de Monaco. So we have a unique partnership, F1 Experiences does, with the ACM. So we have even more unique experiences around yachts and terraces and hospitality and, you know, the very special street circuit that is Monaco. So, packages that allow you to enjoy the Côte d'Azur after the race. So it really is a unique race from that perspective. The United States Grand Prix, you know, in Austin, that's another sweet spot for us. It's a fantastic race. It happens at a great time of the year. I think this year, those last few races will really be important, which is a little bit of a departure maybe from previous years. So I think the U.S. Grand Prix is so enjoyable. Suzuka, I know it's a favorite of the drivers. It's also a favorite of Formula One. Tim, you've seen us in action there in Japan. We love that circuit and that race and the promoter there. And those are just a few. Probably covered off three or four continents there. But that's Formula One, isn't it?
Yeah. Now your job sounds like a dream job. You're traveling the globe under normal circumstances. You're attending these amazing events, putting on these incredible suites and surroundings, but I'm sure it has its challenges. But what's the best thing about your job? And flipping that on its head, what do you find tough about it? Is there anything tough about it?
Oh yeah, there's plenty tough about it. But I think what I find most enjoyable about this job is I came into Formula One, you know, new. My background was in global sports event management, live sporting events, but more in other mega sport like the Olympic Games, FIFA and UEFA and football, the National Football League. I was the CEO of Super Bowl 50 there in San Francisco, a 3-year run to deliver a phenomenal Super Bowl event. So I'm no stranger to major live sporting events, bucket list events, things of that nature. But
sorry,
Formula One just took it to a whole new level.
Hang on a sec. Just pause there. You were the CEO delivering the Super Bowl.
Correct. In San Francisco for 3 years, from 2014 to we played the game in 2016. So
that's huge.
So cool.
That was a pretty cool experience, and it definitely helped me get ready for what is Formula One, yeah. In terms of the spectacle of the event. F1 Experiences was really one of the first business ventures that Liberty Media created in 2017 under Chase Carey and Sean Bratches. And so we got to kind of fly the flag there in that first year to say, we're different now. Formula One is new. It's unique. It's the same. All of the things that you loved about Formula One are there, but now you can see and do and smell and taste things that are just, that are new to the sport. And so that's been a real fun aspect of this job over the last 3 years is, you know, having a whiteboard and creating this company called F1 Experiences and being able to deliver on, you know, these dreams for fans to be able to come and corpus to be able to use the sport as a way to entertain their customers. So all the applications that you would expect, right? And Tim, the toughest part of the job really is just constantly innovating, right? Constantly coming up with new ways to entertain, to create new experiences, to create new partnerships. I mentioned Drive to Survive earlier. You know, clearly Series 3 looks so much different than 2, looks so much different than 1. And that just shows you the dynamic element of the sport. And so our job is to deliver on that dynamic element and constantly be changing things, but be consistent and be authentic. And I think, you know, that's always tough in the job is we are the business of Formula One live at the event, right? So we want to maximize that experience for fans. And so, you know, that is part of our job is to make sure we're staying on the cutting edge of being unique and innovative for our fans. So that's, you know, that's probably one of the, I wouldn't say it's the toughest thing we do, but it's clearly the challenge that we're always thinking about.
Well, on that, I mean, it's an amazing journey so far. But on that then, what is in the pipeline for the business? I suppose we cautiously look towards the future and getting back to some sort of sense of normality. Will you continue to adapt your offerings? What's the plan going forward?
Yeah, Harry, we will. We haven't really had a chance to unleash what we've been working on, but, behind the walls here for the last few months. But clearly, with COVID, the pandemic, and the bubble system that's in place, we have to do several things. We have to reimagine the experiences. We have to also, you know, create an environment that fans actually want to go back to. So in a normal environment, our job is to entice fans to come to a Formula One race. Interesting stat about our 2018 and 2019 years, the first 2 years we were in business, 85% of our fans traveled 1,000 kilometers or more to want to go to a Formula One race. So that travel component of what we're about really resonated. And so, you know, we want to get fans back in that mindset where it's okay to travel to Formula One races. And while, you know, in 2021, it might be a little more local than in international at some races, we're going to create experiences that allow fans, for instance, to, instead of going into the paddock, if the bubble is still in place, they'll be able to go down onto the grid. They'll be able to see what's going on down in that hotspot, that place that people love to go. It's like going down into the middle of the pitch in football, right? So you're right there in the action. You're being able to see things, at the end of the race day. We're going to invent new hospitality methods that allow fans to feel safe, you know, with using the latest restaurant protocols, working with Kate Bevan, and her team at FOHES, you know, Formula One Hospitality, to make sure that we're delivering an experience that is up to the standards that are required. It's interesting, you know, we did with Formula One in January, we worked together and we did some fan research, and we used the F1 fan voice, and so just to find out what's the mentality of the fan, are they ready to come back? And we found in fact that they are. You know, 80% of the fans that responded were considering going back to a Formula One race, if not this year, but in 2022. So that's 4 in 5 people. So that clearly shows you there's pent up demand. Mm-hmm. And so, but they wanted to, you know, they wanted to know they were going back into a safe environment, and they wanted to know they could still enjoy some unique experiences. And so we've had to reimagine knowing that our normal Friday evening for our fan packages are they come down, they meet outside of the paddock in the pit lane. They get a custom tour of all these unique stations that we've developed over the course of an hour and a half. They go to the paddock club and meet a Formula One driver and have a taste of the paddock club and a wonderful reception. You know, that changed. You know, that's now not currently on the roster. So now we have to come up with new ways to bring the paddock to them in the environments that we can control, take them down into places like the grid and other places where, you know, that's allowable. And then, you know, when the restrictions start to ease, hopefully in the second half of the year, you know, we'll then modify, you know, we'll adapt and be able to go back to some of the places that we were able to before. So we're really just working in lockstep with Formula One, to be able to, you know, follow their guidance on, you know, what we can do to still create a meaningful experience for our fans. And then hoping, you know, we can start to return to some of the things that we know were a huge hit and things that fans love to do that involve being able to go back and access the, you know, the paddock and the pit lanes and other special parts of the circuit.
I think one thing's for sure, it's going to be an amazing season. And the more you think about it, the more a driver is capable of a podium. It's brilliant how competitive the grid is. Keith, once again, a huge thank you to you and all the team at F1 Experiences as well for joining us for this show and for the whole and for the first five episodes of this season. Without partners like you, we really couldn't do what we do. So it allows us to continue to bring the biggest names in and around racing to our listeners. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget, everyone, that Motormouth listeners can benefit from a 5% discount on your own F1 experience. You can enjoy all the stuff that Keith has been talking about. So visit f1experiences.com. Use the code Motormouth when you check out to enjoy that tidy little discount. Keith, thank you so much for joining us and signing off this lovely episode we had with Nico Rosberg. All the best for the upcoming season, well, for the rest of the season. And hopefully we'll see you trackside soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.